Thank you very much. We are here to bring you the story behind the music you love and to introduce you to the men who make that music at Orchestra Hall. You'll also get to hear an informal and easy-to-understand discussion of music and its interesting personalities, and what's more, you, listening right now, have an opportunity to win two main floor tickets for a concert by the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. And now let's turn to the pages in your symphony scrapbook devoted to that often misunderstood, though very versatile, instrument, the bassoon. And we have with us on this program Mr. Leonard Sharrow, principal of the bassoon section of the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. Mr. Sharrow, I'm sure our listeners would like to have you identify the passage you played at the beginning of this program and perhaps play some more. It's a well-known passage to me because you made a wonderful recording of it with Mr. Toscanini in the NBC Symphony, and I heard the recording before I'd ever had the pleasure of meeting you.
Oh, that's true, Mr. Caper. Well, the little bit I played was from the opening of the first movement of the Mozart Concerto for Bassoon. I'll play a little more of it now.
I said in introducing you that your instrument is frequently misunderstood. Not so long ago, I ran across a little rhyme, I know just humorous intent, which went something like this: most useful is the deep bassoon, although it seldom carries a tune. And I'm sure you'll feel that that's maligning your instrument because it has a great deal of great many uses in the orchestra. I think misunderstanding comes about, so many people think of the bassoon as a... shall we say, the clown of the orchestra?
That's true. That's been conception of the bassoon, or, as most bassoon players like to think, a misconception of the bassoon for many, many years. It's true that in the past it's been used in that sense. For what reasons, I don't know, or never bothered trying to find out. But I know that the modern bassoon players resent that quite a bit. They feel that the bassoon is very, very capable of extended melodic passages, as well as technical facility. And the name or appellation of bassoon, clown of the orchestra, sits very, very heavily on most of them. They would very much like to get away from that.
Of course, it's also capable of very warm and sentimental expression, isn't it?
That's true.
As well as melodic?
That's true.
Well, I was wondering if you would be good enough to illustrate that for us.
I'd be glad to. I think I'd like to play now a Sicilienne by Paradis, who was a composer who was born in 1759. This piece was written originally for the cello, and I can think of no better way to illustrate the melodic possibilities of the bassoon than to draw on cello literature, cello being accepted as a melodic instrument.
Good. I think you showed our listeners that played by an artist, a virtuoso, which you certainly are, it is a very lovely instrument. By the way, what is the range of the bassoon?
The range of the bassoon is about 3.5 octaves, I would say. Would you care for me to just illustrate that range?
Yeah, I was interested in, once in reading about the bassoon, I ran across a reference to the fact that, or a statement in that, in the Ravel Piano Concerto, I believe it is, there's a high E, which some bassoons do not have, and therefore, this writer said, some players have to fake in quotation marks, the note.
That's
what
true.
Does that mean?
They devise a fingering for that high E, which is just a bit beyond the range of the instrument as we normally play it. And at best, it's one of those fingerings and one of those notes that one can never guarantee. I had, and a number of other bassoon players, friends of mine, did the same thing. I had an extra key put on my instrument specifically for that purpose. Unfortunately, I can't do it today because it's on my other bassoon. The one I have now does not have that high E key.
But I wonder if you could illustrate for us the range of the instrument.
Well, I can play a gradual chromatic scale, starting with the bottom of the instrument and going up as high as it is normally used.
Well, I think that's surprising to people who don't know the instrument and its range. Now, how about applying that to a composition which would show the range in actual...
Well, I would like to play first, just to show a few of the notes in the low register, the first few bars, the opening of the Brahms Sonata in E minor for cello. And after that, I'd like to play a piece by Ravel called Piece in the Form of a Habanera.
I always feel it's unfair when we have a wind player on this program to ask him to talk right after he's played. But I would like to ask some more questions about your work in the bassoon. Before a concert, it's always interesting to me to hear the different members of the orchestra warming up their instruments, the violinists in one corner and the woodwinds and the brasses and so on. Now, I understand that the bassoon is... an instrument that is very sensitive to temperatures. Is that...
That's true.
So the bassoon, temperature changes.
That's right. The bassoon has that in common with all of the other woodwind instruments. Mm-hmm. When they get cold, they go down in pitch. Mm-hmm. And as they get warmer, they go up in pitch.
Well, now, what do you use for warming up routine? Do you play scales? Do you play passages from the works you're going to play in the concert? Or What do you play for warming up exercises?
Well, usually, when the bassoon is very, very cold, so am I. So I start with slow scales or anything of a slow nature to warm both the bassoon and my fingers, and my lip, too. And as all three warm up, I begin to play things that I would probably be playing that same evening in the concert just to refresh them in my mind and make sure that everything works all right, both those passages and the reeds and everything else that I have to think about.
Is the bassoon a difficult instrument to play?
It is, yes. It's a very capricious instrument.
Yeah, what do you mean by that?
Well, it's an instrument that was never developed really scientifically the way the flute or clarinet have been. And a great deal is left to the player as far as pitch is concerned. It can very, very easily be played out of tune, and it's up to the player to see to it that he plays in tune. And then the fingering in many registers is very, very awkward because of the construction of the instrument.
Would you advise any youngster who's about to take up an instrument and wants to look forward to a symphonic career to take up the bassoon?
If he likes to play the instrument, yes.
How
a lot of fun.
How do you know? You just want him to experiment with it and...
Well, I don't know how he would arrive at that conclusion, but just fool around with it, I suppose, at first and see how he takes to it.
I wonder if we could have another illustration of the sound of the instrument.
Yes, I'd like to play just a few bars from a song by Fauré called Après un rêve, After a Dream.
Thanks ever so much, Mr. Sharrow, for this interesting demonstration of an interesting instrument. And now we're happy to send a pair of tickets for a concert by the Chicago Symphony Orchestra to Miss Alice Brainerd of Riverside, Illinois, for her interesting anecdote, which we're adding to our scrapbook. It has to do with the famous cellist, Madame Rhea Garbasova, who told the story to Miss Brainerd. At one time, Miss Garbasova was entrusted with the Stradivarius of the great cellist, the late Emanuel Feuermann, and in her travels, she had to take a bus, and when she got on the bus, she discovered that there was only one seat left for a passenger, and there was no seat left for the cello. And she protested with the driver that she had to have the cello beside her. He insisted on putting it into the luggage compartment, but she kept on saying, "Well, this is a Stradivarius. It's a very delicate instrument." To which his constant answer was, "So what? Of course it's delicate. But I carry eggs in my baggage compartment, and I never break any, so why not stick the Stradivarius in there?" And thanks ever so much to Miss Brainerd for her interesting anecdote.